This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Busi Sibeko is going to have a chat to us just after this short break, right? And Busi will speak about a need for reform in the health sector in South Africa. It's a critical issue in South Africa. We all interact somehow with the health sector, especially the public health sector. And so South Africa, you know that it has made significant progress in terms of certain aspects of health care systems. For example, it has developed sound and progressive public health legislation and policy, but there are also some shortcomings that are there. So Busi is a researcher at Institute for Economic Justice. There's no better person placed to speak to us about the subject other than her. But Busi, I need you in your patience to give us extra 45 seconds or so to take a quick break, and then we'll go straight into the issue.
Power Breakfast, 6 to 9 a.m.
There are some parents who are actually charging their kids rent money. Tori Solitlape says, I was also inconsistent with buying groceries, so my parents pegged it at 2,000 rand.
Gaza saying they gave him all the rent money he paid for 10 years, adding to what he saved. He bought 800K house with a 400K upfront.
And what about you, Maskepe? Are you paying?
No, I don't pay rent at home. Mm. But I think that's better than this man I know who sold his son a car, Gamshasha. He's like, no, that's not my car, it's someone else's car. You buy it.
Yeah, but your friend's story is Maskep.
Power Breakfast, weekdays, 6 to 9 a.m. on Power 98.7. Now, we're talking. The latest news heard here at the top and bottom of every hour. Power 98.7 on 103.6 in the south of Johannesburg, 104.4 in the Vaal, and 107.2 in Ekurhuleni. Now, we're talking.
0861-987-000, 0861-987-000. Busi Sibeko, researcher at Institute for Economic Justice. Busi, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for your patience. I hope you're good.
Yes, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Busi, a very serious issue this, that despite these major achievements in this country that I mentioned prior to the break, the country has made insufficient progress towards Millennium Development Goal number 5 on child health and 6 on HIV, AIDS, TB and malaria. And progress on the 4th one on maternal health has even reversed. So, I mean, do you want to give us maybe a broad picture to start off with and maybe direct us, Busi, as to what is it that you have found the status of our health system in South Africa to be, especially on the backdrop of those MDGs?
So the current system is underfunded and overstretched. And in the fifth democratic administration, we've observed that the government has taken an austerity position, which means that they're cutting expenditure and have increased taxes, as we've seen with the VAT increase, to basically address national debt. But what that has done is that it's actually severely undermining the public health care system and the viability of the national health insurance. We've seen that in the last period, spend per uninsured person only increased by 1% on average. And this is despite the burden of disease, as you've already mentioned, and the high medical price inflation. So medical price inflation is higher than normal inflation. So this 1% increase is not enough to address the historical and current inequalities that persist in the healthcare system. So in the last NHI white paper, the government said that they'll need to double what they currently spend on healthcare, which is about 4.2%, in order to be able to provide healthcare for all. And at this rate, we are absolutely not going to get there. And there's just really deep inequalities in the healthcare provisioning in the private and the public healthcare system, which actually spend about the same amount in terms of GDP.
What are the effects thereof on an ordinary South African who interacts, especially with the public health system, on an everyday basis?
Yeah, so basically, last year, for instance, I'll give an example. Last year, At the national level, they approved wage increases, but then they did not increase the allocation to provincial departments. So what this means is that provincial departments had to absorb these additional costs. So what that means is that money is therefore then reallocated towards wages as opposed to, actual services. So this is why we already have a shortage of doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals. So obviously they're not going to hire more people because they can't afford to. But in addition to that, there's not enough provisioning of the actual equipment and so forth and medicines that are needed. Right now we see that there's shortages in medicine that is currently occurring, birth control being one of them. So that's the real effect on the average South African. But I think case studies have also shown that these sort of short-term austerity practices can really debilitate a generation. Like, for instance, in Greece, they cut the budget between January and May 2011, right? HIV infections left by 52% because they wanted to cut the budget for needle exchange program targeting drug addicts. So you see that these impacts, although it seems like a short-term gain to address debt, what's actually happening is that, 52% increase in HIV infections is massive for the next generation or current generations of people, So we kind of have to think of it as it's the cost of austerity to human lives.
And the authorities, Busi, how do they respond to these shortcomings that you've just highlighted? I'm sure they interface every single day. Well, maybe not every day, but more often than not with those scary figures. What is the response to these shortcomings?
I mean, we have in the past tried to engage with the ministers of health without much strategic plans going forward. Like, for instance, if we've said that there needs to be a health financing strategy, and civil society as a whole has called upon this, and there hasn't been much movement in that case. Yeah, certainly we hope, we really, as Section 27 and IEJ, really are open and hoping to be able to engage with the new ministers to be able to take the agenda forward so that we can have a provisioning of healthcare for all that is of high quality and that is just.
I'm just looking at the letter to the new ministers, as you've just mentioned, Dr. Zweli Mkhize in particular, where it says that a civil society organization, Section 27 and the Institute of Economic Justice, congratulate you on the appointment of Minister of Health and Finance, respectively. And later on, you are pointing out that something that is very important. And you're saying that, as you pointed out in the recent fact sheet, the implementation of austerity budgets by government during the fifth democratic administration severely undermined the public health system and the viability of the national health insurance. And you mentioned that the spend per uninsured person increased by only 1% average annually between 2015 and 2016, 2019 to 2020, despite a rising burden of disease and high medical price inflation. You are pointing at the incongruency of the expenditure vis-a-vis the needs on the ground of an ordinary patient. Did the letter get the response, one? And if so, what has that response been? Because that's extremely specific. That's very clear. There's a budgetary issue that needs to be addressed, and you are not ambiguous on the matter.
Yes. So we have not received a response, as the letter has only gone out today. But there's a reason that we've addressed it to both the Ministers of Finance and Health, and it's particularly because of this reason, right? So it's a financing issue as well as a healthcare system issue. For instance, we can't ignore the fact that austerity is being exacerbated by wasteful expenditure and corruption and so forth within the departments, right? As the Department of Health have really received, bad ratings or reports in their auditing. So that's why it's addressed to both of them.
I would assume that you would be calling for an increase in expenditure per patient in South Africa, as you are bemoaning the 1% increase. You would definitely want more in order for an ordinary patient to benefit more, or at least an uninsured person to benefit from the health system.
Yes, certainly. But we also obviously concerned about the quality of spend. So it's not just saying that we want it to increase, but for the inequalities to be adequately addressed, there needs to be an increase in expenditure, because as I've already mentioned, we spend about the same on GDP, the private and the public healthcare system, whereas the private system only basically accommodates only 17% of the population. So how can we have the same pool of funding for 17 people as we do for 83 people out of every 100?
Yeah, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, Busi. Bear with me. One would say that the increase in expenditure would not necessarily have the desired effect, mainly based on the management of finances, particularly by the health systems. You see, and you look at Gauteng, for one, it has been notorious for backlogs and service providers not being paid. So management of those funds prior to calling for the increase, but ensuring that the management of funds goes to proper use. Would that be a factor that could improve the system in any way?
Certainly. We are, like I've said, we are concerned about the quality of spend and how the money is being spent. And that's certainly a conversation that is happening in civil society. And we hope to take it forward, and something that needs real technical expertise on how to really address this issue, and really needs political investment and will to be able to move forward.
The one that would also affect many people, and many of our listeners, I would assume also that they would be very sympathetic to this issue, especially of cancer, where it is argued that the government has an opportunity to negotiate better prices for cancer medicines in the same way that they dealt with the issue of antiretroviral therapy. Is our government not intervening thoroughly? Give us a picture on that issue, because I know that more and more people we hear of these days are diagnosed with cancer, and many of them, they bemoan going to their public hospitals, mainly because there's inadequate medicines, the care is not as it should be, the long queues are a factor.
Yes. So that is not necessarily my area of expertise, but I would say that there's certainly space, like we've said, like you've mentioned, in the TAC campaign, there was the room to do so, and there was a lot of mobilization by civil society and well as government buy-in to address this issue of basically negotiating prices. And what we are trying to point out here is that there's a space for that, particularly in terms of cancer medications and so forth. So what we are really saying to the government is that, I mean, maybe the conversations are already happening, but we're saying that there needs to be more focus on that. Like you're saying, there's increasing numbers of people who are with cancer. So it's certainly something we should be looking at.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the situation at times, it's affected by the human resource factor, the personnel on the ground. There was an example that in Camus Hospital, Northern Cape, there were only two nurses and their assistants to keep 28-bed hospital running. And that seems to be inadequate. And the shortage of staff in our hospitals is also a factor. I know it's very much easy for us to at times open the microphone and scream at nurses and tell them they're incompetent. But incapacity can also be a factor in this instance.
Yes, and that's why austerity is a vicious cycle, right? So you tightening the belt, and in doing so, you end up not having enough staff, right? You continuously reproducing the system, which is already flawed and under-resourced. So this is why we call for a new updated HR strategy to be able to address the shortages in healthcare staff.
Musi, as we come to the end of this program, I'm very much interested in knowing a little bit, if you don't mind, about the Institute of Economic Justice, especially your interest in the public health sector. But on a day-to-day basis, what do you guys do? What are you about? And this is mainly for information purposes around the Institute itself.
Okay, so the Institute is actually very, very new. It was only launched in September 2018. And so we've got a number of projects going on. I, in particular, work on national budgeting. So I look at both the expenditure and revenue sides. So that is taking into consideration that we can't tell government to spend more if we cannot tell them how to get that money. So one of the issues that I work on is tax justice. And so how to look, have a positive vision of what that looks like for South Africa. But we've got a number of projects going on, and we will have a website up and running soon. But it's basically a policy advocacy think tank, and research, of course, in particular. But my day-to-day, I suppose, as most of my teammates, is a lot of research and putting together reference groups and just thinking, rethinking economics is really the core of it, and kind of putting forward progressive economic policies in different avenues and forums.
Well, Musi, thank you so much for your time. I'm hoping that this is not the final discussion that we will have. We'll have many, many more in the future, because I think you're doing very interesting work. Without the economy, nothing else functions. Nothing else works. Everything else that we do is hinged on the economy, because we wouldn't be a happy country if the economy was a complete mess. So let's talk some more in the future, and all the best. Thanks, by the way, for staying awake at this hour and helping us to push the 24-hour economy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Busi Sibeko, researcher at Institute for Economic Justice, here on Power 98.7.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.